Okay, and what I'm going to do here is just continue on. I'm going to talk about hotspots, YSF, FCS, WireSex, because there are some questions about that, and have some comments regarding your security on the Internet. So that's what I'm going to discuss here in some more detail, because I did want to give a yell out to W0JKG, James, who's been very helpful in the background of MinWiz here, who's been struggling through some medical issues. And I just want to say, you know, we're thinking about you, and hope things are going to turn out okay. So I'm not going to go into detail about what's going on with him, but keep our fingers crossed. Put it to you this way, he'll end up being out of work for 4 to 5 months, so you know, it's not something trivial that takes you out of work for that long a period of time. But he's not been on the air very much, but occasionally he does listen to the net. Anyway, with that, I want to stand by for a bit in case people do want to drop, and then we'll talk about the YSF, FCS, WireSex, and how all that plays together, along with some advice for your own personal digital security on the Internet. This is K9EQ. And I'll stand by there, Chris. Are you copying me okay? I'm actually talking on Jim's Zoom stick here for the first time on Fusion. Copy okay there, Chris? Yeah, initially something funny coming up. You're on the FCS. Anyway, stand by.
Hey, Chris, I got to run. They're starting a Raspberry Pi net. Just want to let you hear the Zum stick. Come on, KI6ZUZM Zum Radio 73, and God bless you. And I'm sure you're going to have a good talk about the hotspots. This is probably one of the newest ones on the market. Again, it's on Ham Radio website, Zum, Z-U-M, skip a space radio. KCYQL is clear, and QSY to REF. 38 Charlie, where they'll be discussing this product tonight on the Raspberry Pi Net. KCYQL is now clear.
Okay, I'm just waiting there for the people leaving to settle down a little bit. Looks like most people are going to hang around. Well, we'll be talking about the Zoom spot, or the Zoom spot, I guess that's what they call it, here as well. So anyway, I wanted to give, I mean, there were some questions about where you figure out, you know, what YSF things are out there, and what's FCS, and what's YSF, and how does that work with WireSex, and everything like that. And so I wanted to go through a little bit of that. First off, let me switch to a different page here. And I wanted to make people aware of something. And this is what some people are calling bot-based credential stuffing. What this really is people guessing passwords. And so Akamai is a company that does a lot of Internet distribution of materials. It's quite likely that if you listen to something streaming or you watched a video or something like that, or you've downloaded a program, it came from Akamai. They're basically a content distribution system. And they did a report, and this report only deals with the retail industry from May to December of 2018. And what they monitored, and this is on their network, so not everybody's network. Akamai's network, retail only, May to December. They monitored or detected about 10 billion credential stuffing attempts in the retail industry. So what this means is that these retail websites, Target, you know, Walmart, whatever, they're attempting, the bad guys are attempting to log into these websites using your credentials. and they monitored 10 billion attempts, 115 million attempts daily, something like that. And what they're looking to be able to do is get personal information, account balances and assets, or looking for opportunities to cash in. And by the way, the retail online market is expected to be close to $5 trillion for 2021. So there's a lot of incentive here. And basically what they're doing is they're playing by the numbers. As a note, I run a couple of websites here. I've got the hamoperator.com. We've got the YSF reflector and stuff like that. And it's interesting to look at the log files of these things, because in the log... file, I get to see all the attempts of people trying to log in. And it is, you know, in some cases, it really gets me upset, because it's like they're using my bandwidth. And, I mean, they can just pound on the website trying to log into it to take over the website or the Linux system that's running the YSF reflector. The log just gets filled with attempts to log into it. And more people attempt to log into those sites than actually use the sites, by far. It's really kind of annoying. But where this is going is you want to protect yourself. And what can happen is you might have a user ID and password that you use on a site that is not very well protected. And hackers go in, you know, hack into it, steal all the credentials for that website. As soon as they get that data, what they're going to do is they're going to turn around and try everything that they can to log into with those credentials. So if they happen to get your, say you're at the BillFarquhar.com and you've got a user ID and password, as soon as they hack that site and get those user ID and passwords, they're going to try to log into banks, retail, whatever, and if they're able to log in, they're going to do whatever they can to extract as much money out of that opportunity as possible. Here's the bottom line here. Whatever you do, do not use the same password on every website or on more than one website. Always use a different password for different websites. And in fact, I highly recommend using a username. So we think a username. Okay, Chris, that's a good username. Nah, Chris is a bad username. Because they're going to guess usernames like that. Then they're going to go banging away on the password. For example, the Ham Operator website. One of the popular login usernames is K9EQ. Huh, go figure. And admin and stuff like that. Believe me, the username is nothing close to any of those. So I like actually using a Bizarro username. In fact, I almost treat usernames like passwords, you know, make them up with kind of random characters. One thing that I found is that ham radio call signs are almost never guessed by the hackers. I've got, in the sites that I have, millions of attempts to log into these sites. None of them have ever used a ham radio call sign and the password. And we can remember ham radio call signs pretty well. So you might have a password of Jim and Fred, and maybe the first letter is capital or something like that. And all you got to do is remember Jim and Fred, because you're going to remember Jim and Fred's call sign. So that's a really good way to, I think those are really effective call signs. Or ways to do passwords. So whatever you do, don't use the same password at more than one website. And if the site is important to you, like a banking account, add some stuff onto that password. Make it a little bit more complex, because you do not want to be the low-hanging fruit that these guys go after. Anyway, enough of that. If you're interested in more of that stuff, you can go to grc.com/sn. The SN stands for Security Now. Okay, so let's start talking about hotspots and things like that. Currently on FCS 003-23, we have 16 connections. Over on the YSF side, we have 18 and 115 on Wires X. So what is all this stuff? Well, the FCS and YSF are two different hotspot networks. So you can get like an OpenSpot or a ZoomSpot or something like that, and you can connect to these networks. In the case of the FCS networks, there is a central server that can support up to 99 different modules. So in this case, FCS 3 is located in Canada, and we're on module 23. So modules 1 through 99 are all on the same server. And in fact, you can sometimes, so AmericaLink will have a lot of connections on there. When AmericaLink is busy, you might notice more dropouts on NWIS because we're all using the same server. And, you know, the bandwidth gets up there and you have problems. So FCS 1 is in Europe. FCS 2 is down in Florida. 3, as I mentioned, is in Canada. 4 is in Spain. So by the FCS, which server that is, you can tell where you're going to. And then the module number is just like a channel on that particular server. So the operators of these different servers have allocated their channels to different things. So, for example, MinWiz is on FCS 3-23. We have an agreement with the operator of FCS 3 to, you know, put our name up there and host it there. Likewise, AmericaLink is typically on 90. So they're on FCS 2-90, FCS 3-90, stuff like that. LA Repeater is all over the place. They're on 2-70, 3-70, that kind of stuff. And so with your hotspot, you can then, you know, go and connect to these FCS rooms. Typically, that's done either through the web console or touchstones. MinWiz, we prefer you not use touchstones. Now, to keep in mind that your hotspot cannot connect to Wires X. So you need either a FT2, FTM100, or FTM400 to connect to Wires X. And so Yaesu's done some clever things with this PDN mode where you can run the Wires X software, and for example, with the FT2, you can just use it. And you don't actually need another radio, or you can use it as an access point and have it connected to the computer as you want around the house with your another HD communicating with it. So that will connect directly to Wires X. Wires X has nodes and rooms. So a node is used to connect to a repeater so that you can talk to a node. Nodes then can connect to other nodes, or they can connect to a room. And so right now we have 115 nodes connected to the room that is 21493 MinWiz. In order for you to hear MinWiz on, say, FCS 3-23, this is what's done. There's a repeater sitting where I'm located on 444.025, so you can find it if you go and look at the listings on Ham Operator or on their Wires X console or something. You'll see the K9EQ repeater on 444.025. which explains for some people on the hotspots why the call sign K9EQ keeps coming up. So that repeater is connected through an HRA 200 to a node that's connected to MinWiz. So the repeater is handling MinWiz. Sitting here next to me, I have a DV4 Mini through a Raspberry Pi that's connected to FCS 3-23. So if you're on FCS 3-23, you're hearing me going through that repeater and through the DV4 Mini and the Raspberry Pi, and it's blasting up to Canada where that server is, and that's how it's going from MinWiz to the FCS network. And now you can take your hotspot, and if you wanted to, let's say you're on the FCS reflector. I just wrote a program here to count. Still at 16. I've hacked the website there, and I got a program here that'll tell me who's connected. The Midland's on FCS3A, with me just pushing a button here on the computer. YSF reflectors. So YSF reflectors are more like the Wild Wild West. Anybody can start a YSF reflector. So there is a website in Germany. It's ysfreflector.de that keeps track of all the YSF reflectors. And unlike the FCS reflectors, the YSF reflectors only have one channel. So it's more like the Wires X room. You got one gazina and one gazauta. And it's based on basically the IP address, and you know, you can run more copies of the program on a single computer, in which case you may have more than one port address. But basically, anybody can spool up a YSF reflector. You can keep it private if you want and just not publish the IP address, or you can make it public and register it at ysfreflector.de. Now, if you go to that website, it's going to be in German. What you want to do is they probably go to register.ysfreflector.de, and there's registration information there. You know, if you want to register your own reflector, you would do it there. And I would say this, it's probably a good idea to get the reflector working before you go and register it. In the case of MinWiz, we are at US MinWiz 21493. So that's the ASCII text string, US space MinWiz space 21493. And so they're identified through the names. That name is hashed. It's not important that you know what a hash is, but it basically turns letters into numbers. And so MinWiz 21493 hashes to a number of 37624. 37624 is a five-digit number, as are all rooms and nodes on WiresX. That causes confusion. There is nothing that is the same about a YSF reflector number and a WiresX room number. They are completely different things. Why are YSF reflectors five digits? That's because WiresX rooms are five digits. And the clever little insight in the YSF community is that, well, this is all digital stuff. You know, like when you go on your radio, your FT70 or whatever, and you say, oh, I want to switch the repeater to this room, that's all digital stuff going back and forth. So with a hotspot, you're already receiving the digital stuff. So why not control the hotspot using the commands that Yaesu created to control WiresX? So that's what's going on in some of these hotspots. If you have a open spot, the original one, you can't do that. If you have an open spot 2, you can. If you have a Zoom spot or you have something running PyStar, you can with limited success. So I want to explain some of this stuff. So in our case with MinWiz, what's happening on MinWiz, there is an open spot sitting here next to me. Tuned to, you might have guessed, 444.025, the repeater that's sitting about 30 meters from where I am. And so it's sitting next to the DB4 Mini, and they're both tuned to the same repeater. The open spot is then sending its traffic to a server center in San Francisco, I think it is. Either New York or San Francisco. Isn't that funny? It just doesn't matter anymore. Where I'm running a virtual machine, a Linux virtual machine, that is hosting a YSF reflector software. And then from there, it's blasting out to everybody on the YSF network, and right now we've got 17 people connected to the YSF reflector network, and then it gets distributed from there. So likewise, folks connected to YSF, they come in here through the open spot, out to the repeater, and off onto WiresX. So the MinWiz room is 21493. The YSF reflector is 37624. If you're on WiresX and you want to connect to MinWiz, you would use your radio to enter the 21493. However, if same radio, if you turn your radio from the repeater frequency over to your hotspot frequency and you want to connect to MinWiz, you would have to enter the number 37624. And that's because rather than talking to a wires X node and having the wires X node connect to 21493, you're talking to your local hotspot, and you're telling your local hotspot to connect to US MinWiz 21493, that this character K9EQ has spun off in the server that's in either San Francisco or New York, and he's such a character, can't remember which city it's in. So that's the difference. So for example, in the FT2, you can store memories. You know, you can save rooms and node numbers and things like that. If you were to save MinWiz 21493 and then try to use that on the hotspot, you would connect to something else if it's there at all. You would actually have to have two entries, one for 37624 on YSF and one for 21493 on Wires X. So isn't that fun? It's actually easier to control these hotspots with like a radio like the FT70. I at least find it that way. So the FT70, the FDM 3207, and 7250, the introductory radios, they just pretty much deal with the numbers, so you just enter the five-digit number. You're connected to a hotspot, put in the 32624, connected to wires X, put in the 21493. So obviously not everybody on Wires X is bridged to the hotspot network. So MinWiz is. Note for those on FCS 003-23, we normally are not connected to 3-23. At the end of February, we discontinued that service. It is connected right now for the net, but when the net's done here, it'll be disconnected again. But we're leaving it active, so it's kind of a home away from home, if you will, and the YSF U.S. MinWiz 21493 is what is normally always connected to MinWiz. Hopefully that answers questions regarding hotspots and how all this stuff plays together. So let me take a break and see if there are any comments about anything. This is K9EQ.
Oh, my God, Chris, thank you very much. This is WD. And I did not know that other number was a hash. That explains a lot to me. You explained the difference in the networks and Wires X. I didn't know that Wires X and YSF were different like that, but I understand now. I've got my hotspot working, and I know what to put in, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you. WD9DAN.
KB7SQS with a comment.
Okay, very good, Dan. Thank you for those comments. And by the way, Dan, you'll have to let me know if you're a software kind of a guy. KB7SQS, go ahead.
So, I'm kind of anti-hotspot, and the reason is because I find that the majority of the people do not know how to set them up, and it causes all kinds of havoc. It's just my take on things. So, you know, with what Yaesu's done, being able to get into Wires X so easy now, I just think that's a much better route to go. Anyway, Chris, just my opinion. Appreciate all of you. KB7SQS.
Very good. I understand that completely. And, I get where you're coming from. It's an advantage of what Yaesu has done in having a system that works together. So if you go get something that's Fusion from Yaesu, it's going to work with the other stuff that's Fusion from Yaesu. And there is a lot of value to that. One of my biggest fears is that there are going to be Fusion radios showing up on the market from China. And you just know the quality's not going to be as good. They're going to have firmware bugs in them, and they're going to make a mess out of everything. And there are problems with hotspots being used incorrectly. And some of the hotspot stuff doesn't make it easy to use them correctly. And that was, it's kind of a nice segue, because I was going to get into a little bit of the trouble with hotspots. Now we've talked about the relationship between all these things. It's like, okay, now tell me, which hotspot should I buy, not buy? What am I in for? So I do want to do that. But Dan, just a question for you. Do you have a background in software and computers or anything like that?
Well, you could say that, Chris. I'm not real good with networking, but I write software for a living. Not like most folks, not the heavy-duty industrial stuff. I'm a Microsoft Access expert, been doing it since 1995. Big bucks to make small corporate databases for groups of 100 or so people that are local, not worldwide stuff. But I can make that walk your dog, and I get paid very well for it. So yeah, I've got a background in software. Been messing with computers since I was a young pup. But my weak area is networking and that sort of stuff. Go ahead.
Okay, very good. And Dan, FYI, he's coming in on YSF. So let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that's going on here. As was alluded to, hotspots can be like the wild, wild west. The problem in, you know, having a network connection is people can send you anything. A good programming practice is that anything that is sent to you, you validate and you decide, what am I going to do with this? Am I okay with this? And if it doesn't meet your criteria, you throw it away. A lot of people don't do this well, hence all the security bugs. But so that's the environment we're working in. And so there is a program called this YSF Reflector. It's over on GitHub, which is a public mechanism for sharing software source code. And it's over there. I've taken the YSF Reflector software, fixed a number of bugs in it, and I've been going through and making changes to it to make it more palatable for somebody who runs a large network such as MinWiz. Because on MinWiz, we just can't have funny stuff going on. It's just, it's so overwhelming. You know, we got like day jobs. Well, some people. It's a lot of work. And so what I have done on the YSF Reflector that's running on MinWiz right now is it's been modified quite a bit. And the main thing that it's doing for us is it is dropping packets that it doesn't like. So we've had problems, and there was an instance during the net where the 444.025 repeater was kicked off the air. The repeater just shut down. That probably was caused by a bad packet coming in, probably on the hotspot network. And the YSF is being filtered, so hopefully it didn't come in through there. But it may have come in on the FCS, because I've got that running. But anyway, that's what I've been trying to do, is make the reflector stuff more sensitive to problems and dropping bad packets. I haven't gotten around to it yet, but in some respects, I've tried to make the YSF a little easier to install. So out of the box, you pretty much run it under Linux. Currently, the reflector that I have is being built for Windows, Raspberry Pi, Linux, like Debian, and also being built to run in the cloud on system from DigitalOcean. That's what's running right now. When I get around to it, what I'll do is I'll put up a version of the Windows YSF Reflector, since WiseX knows have to run Windows, And what that would mean is that if you have a WireSX room or something like that, you can also run the YSF reflector software on the same computer. That's kind of the idea. As always, my software's never done. It's ugly, needs to be documented better, et cetera, et cetera. But one of these days, I will get a link up on hamoperator.com and give people the opportunity to go and download the YSF program and with very little work, install it on a Windows computer and see what they think about it. So the way these hotspots are done, you have one company, Shark RF, that is kind of a commercial company. I mean, it's two guys building the thing. And, but the firmware guy is pretty good. I got to say that. He's pretty good. All the other hotspots are pretty much homemade. So let me use a case of the Zoom spot. Since that's fairly popular right now, you can get it on ham radio outlet. Here's how that thing is built. The guy that does the YSF reflector stuff also does a YSF client. He also does stuff for DMR and D-Star, and most of the stuff started with D-Star and all this kind of stuff. And so he has a deal over on GitHub where he posts the code for the YSF client. I'll just talk about Fusion in this case, but he's got the same stuff for DMR and D-Star and P25 and NXDN and all that kind of stuff, but I'll just talk about Fusion here. So he's got a repository over on GitHub where he publishes the software. I have not found the software to be of great quality. I mean, he's done some amazing things. Some of the stuff he's gotten working has been quite an education. However, there are no comments in the software. And so sometimes it's harder in hell to figure out what's going on. And, for example, in the case of the YSF reflector software, which is probably some of the simpler software, I was able to find some bugs that I think existed just because things weren't documented very well. And, you know, you look at the code and you go, yeah, that's right, but, you know, you got to really know what the code's trying to do. But it's a hobby, right? This isn't a business for this guy. So this is where the Raspberry Pi software comes from, is from, what is it, G4 LKX, I think is its call sign, over in the UK, I believe. So that's where that comes from. What the heck's PiStar? Well, PiStar is another guy, MM0, also in the UK, and what he has done is he's taken some of the code from you know, the YSF or the client software, and it's been bundled together, once again, with some clever things being done as far as, you know, setting up Wi-Fi and so forth like that. But once again, this is a hobby project. It isn't commercial. And in the case of some of the PiStar stuff, I've really had a difficult time trying to understand how some of these things work. And there are some major inefficiencies that, for example, I alluded to the fact you can change what you're connected to digitally from the radio.
That opening or not.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Dan. Go ahead. What was that?
To it, Chris, and I appreciate it. I've got to run, though. I've got to get out of this room for a few minutes. And I would like to talk to you about some of this some other time, however.
All right, no problem. Well, I'm getting a little long-winded here, but that's why I'm doing this after the death. Anyway, there are problems with the... this is all a hobby thing, and the stuff doesn't necessarily play together. Another guy has written the firmware for the radio part of the Zoom spot. So there's a little analog devices, AD7021 chip on there. Not the greatest radio chip. We could talk about the problems with it. And he's written the firmware. The best I can tell is there are bugs with the firmware. It doesn't have AFC turned on and some other things. The bottom line is this is another hobby project. and all this stuff is being bolted together, and here's the Zoom spot. Now, it's kind of amazing it does as much of it as it does, but you have to understand it isn't going to be a real plug-and-play kind of thing. It will mostly work, but if you're interested in experimenting, yeah, it gets you a hotspot. So one of the major issues with the hotspot, the Zoom spot, I will go through the major issues. So if you have a Zoom spot, listen up. You need to pay attention to this. Otherwise, KB7SQS will not be happy with you. There's a couple things that you need to do on the Zoom spot to get it to behave well. First off, you need to update it. So on the PiStar, in the menu system, there's a thing called Expert, and a big warning to say, you know, don't mess with this unless you really know what the heck you're doing. Well, sadly, you're going to have to mess with it. There is an upgrade function, and you, as it comes from HamRadio Outlet, you're going to be 5 or 6 versions old with the firmware. You will need to upgrade it. You will need to upgrade it more than once. You might think once is good enough. No, it isn't. It only upgrades one step every time you hit the upgrade button. So you need to keep hitting upgrade until you get it upgraded as far as it will upgrade to, and then that's taken care of. However, that does not upgrade the firmware for the radio part. For that, you have to download the binary file, and there are instructions out there on how to do that. And from the command line on Linux, you have to install the firmware. So I'll guarantee you that the firmware on your board is out of date. Once you've done that, you've upgraded the software and upgraded the firmware. And I should add that they're moving from the 3-point whatever series of software to the 4-point, the upgrade process will not work going from 3 to 4. You actually you'll end up having to download stuff off the internet and do some stuff yourself. So it is not going to be fully automatic. The big issue with the PiStars is that they are extraordinarily sensitive to frequency. And by that I mean I can sit here, I mean we don't think about frequency, right? You get your Yaesu Fusion radio and it talks to other Yaesu Fusion radios. It just works. You don't care about the frequency accuracy of your radio. And that's because the firmware and the radio and the circuitry deals with small errors in the frequency. The Zoom spot does not deal with small errors in frequency. So, for example, with C4FM, the inner deviation frequency, there's an inner and outer deviation, is 900 hertz. So if you have a frequency error between the transmitter and the receiver of 200 cycles, that means your deviation has been shifted to minus 700 plus 1100. The result of that is that it's going to increase your bit error rate. And for whatever reason, it does not appear that AFC or any of that kind of stuff is being done, which you really have to do. So what you'll find when you get your PiStar is you can see the bit error rate measurement of your transmission, and it's probably, in most cases, not going to be very good unless you do something about it. The best way to do the bit error measurement is actually to put your radio into voice-wide mode. There's reasons for doing that, but it gives the hotspot more data to look at potential bit errors. And go look at that BER number, and you really want that to be like 1% or less. If it's above 1%, stop, go and do something. The something you have to do is go back into that expert mode, go in the case of Yaesu, go to the YSF gateway part, and there's a thing called RX offset. So I'm talking to you specifically about PiStar, but a lot of these things are also common to, like, the OpenSpot. So you will find an RX offset in the OpenSpot just in a different place. what you want to do is take that RX offset and adjust it maybe in increments of 200 hertz and fiddle around with it until you get the bit error rate so that's pretty decent. You will note, if you have more than one fusion radio, that that offset might have to be different for the two fusion radios. I have, like, my FTM400 here. When I adjust it for my FT2, and it works fine with the FT2, my FTM400 at 50 watts won't even bring up the hotspot because the frequency difference between the FT2 and the FTM400 is that much. Yaesu is not out of spec. Their radios are spot on. It's just that they have to be ultra spot on for it to work with the hotspot. Also, if you take the hotspot and you get it working with your HT and you go out into the car and it's colder in the car, you'll probably have to adjust it again, especially if winter's in Minnesota, that kind of thing. So I just wanted to point out the hotspot, particularly the Zoom Spot, and others built on the same platform, so that would include Jumbo Spot, MMDVM, that kind of stuff. Extremely sensitive to the frequency. Surprisingly, DB4 Mini, not so bad. They've handled it pretty well. The original OpenSpot handles it pretty well. I don't know about the OpenSpot 2. But I just want you to be aware of that. And a lot of the problems that KB7SQS alludes to is because the people with the OpenSpot are running crappy software or old software that has bugs in it, or the bit error rate is so high that all this data flying across the network is causing bad things to happen. So in the version of YSF reflector that we're running on Minwiz, we try to filter a lot of that stuff out. All the other YSF reflectors out there, all the FCS reflectors out there do not do this filtering. So that's kind of the stuff trying to do with the YSF reflector. So I'll take another break here, and maybe we've got some comments, questions, that kind of stuff with hotspots. Go ahead, K9EQ.
I appreciate it. Let me see if I got this. I appreciate all the information, Chris. I understand and can relate to it. I plan on using my OpenSpot 2 here in the vehicle. You know, I've only got one repeater in the neighborhood, and I drive through a remote country a lot where there's no repeater accessible. So I was planning on using the OpenSpot 2 with my FTM400 in the vehicle to get to different rooms. If there's a better plan for that, let me know what it is. And I've got to leave here in just a minute. WD9DAN.
Okay, Dan. Well, you might want to investigate the PDN mode. That just disappeared off the screen. Yes, you're on an FTM400, I think. Yeah. You can use the PDN mode. So here's the thing. To run the PDN mode, which means what you end up doing is you take your so for example, the FTM400, you've got the SCU20 cable, let's say, that comes with the radio, plug it into the laptop, running Windows, and the WireSync software, and the Wi-Fi on the laptop is connected to your cellular, that will work. It is not terribly convenient to have a Windows laptop sitting in the car, you know, on the seat next to you and stuff like that. Things like the Zoom Spot and whatever are really handy little gadgets. They're kind of tiny. The Linux is really nice. And quite frankly, my preference would be to have the hotspot in the car and not have to deal with a Windows computer. So I think if you're talking on wires, X, the PDN is going to work pretty well, and then you can go anywhere. But there is a convenience to the hotspot. Over on hamoperator.com in the NETS area, there is a listing of ham NETS and a number of places where there exist bridges. So if you're on a hotspot and you want to know what other things are connected to hotspots, because it can be a little daunting to figure out where to go, there is a list of the more popular places that people go to, which lists the WireSX room, the FCS, or the YSF, or the Brandmeister DMR, or whatever, if they're doing
bridging to a DMR, so I'm trying to be inclusive there as possible. But that's over on hamoperator.com as well, and if you have any additions or suggestions there to add to that list, let me know and I can put them up there. Any other comments from K9EQ? Okay, we've got KD9IXA, we got Sharon, Wilmette, Illinois, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Chris. Couple things. One question is this net recorded anywhere? There has been a boatload of information, great information tonight. I've been missing several Monday night nets here, but great information, and I'd like to see if I could go back and take some notes. Second thing is the I have also a Zoom spot, and I have noticed on Fusion that my bit error rate is seems to be getting higher. I've been at 3 point something and 4 point something, and everyone says I'm getting through, but I'd like to avoid, you know, any dropouts. Now, if I were to start changing the RX offset, I don't know if you have to change the other offset or not, but in the PiStar software, I think you start at, minus 500 or something like that, and go from there and try things out. But if you change it on the Fusion, do you change... Once you go in the PiStar, do you change it for all modes? Because I've also got DMR and DSTAR, so I'm just curious about that. So if you change the RX offset or any offset, do you change it for all digital modes? But thanks again for the net. It's very informative, and I appreciate it. So back to net control. Go ahead, Chris. This is KD9IX.
Okay, very good, Sharon. Excellent comments there. I was thinking about that today. And then one of the things that the PiStar has done is they're able to switch to different modes. I haven't played around much with that, so I'm by no means an expert in it. But let's say you're on Fusion. Then you can go grab your DSTAR radio, and the PiStar will figure out, oh, he's on DSTAR. I'm going to switch to DSTAR, which you got to admit is pretty clever. So what happens with the RX offset? You do adjust the RX offset in, for say, for Fusion. In that expert area, you go into the YSF gateway to adjust it. So I'm guessing that that is the offset for YSF. And likewise, there's another menu for DSTAR, and I haven't looked at it, but I'm going to assume there's an RX offset there also, and that can be a different number than what's in YSF. Under the hood of the PiStar, here's what's going on. There is a master program called MMDVM that's running, and it's sort of coordinating everything. It's the conductor. And it's not doing any radio stuff. It's just organizing stuff. And when it decides that it's going to use Fusion, it says, okay, I'm going to start this YSF program over here, and I'm going to use that. And so the YSF program goes and talks to the radio. If it's going to be a DSTAR, it shuts off the YSF, and it starts up the DSTAR program, and it uses the DSTAR program. Each of these programs, MMDVM, Fusion, YSF,
DSTAR, DMR, have their own .ini file, and if you dig around in the PyStar, you can find all these things. They're in the /etc, I think. There's two places in there. I'm going to it if people are interested. And all the parameters are stored in these .ini files, which, by the way, you can edit with a text editor, the same as going in and changing them on the website, or on the web page. So, yeah, I think you would have to do the calibration for the different modes. And, yeah, 3.5 is pretty high. The Fusion system is designed to work with a bit error rate of 1% or less. So that's why I say it should be under 1%. And I've been fairly easily been able to get it under 1% by fiddling with the frequency. Not for all my radios. For one radio, I can get it under 1% pretty easily. And it depends upon your radios. So, yeah, I would, Sharon, I'd fiddle around with it and get it down under 1%. Because the random errors that occur, you don't know where they're going to occur. And there's certain data that's in the that's being transmitted. If it gets screwed up, it really causes problems. And you don't want that. And that's some of the stuff I'm trying to filter with the YSF reflector here. So, yeah, you want to get it under 1%, and it just takes a lot of fiddling. So put your radio in voice wide. You know, don't connect to a popular room when you're doing this. And go ahead and fiddle around with that. One of the tricks I will do is I will bracket it. I will go, say, low in frequency, and when it starts climbing up that curve, say around 3, 4%, you know, you're on the cliff at 3 or 4%. You don't have to go very far, and it's not there at all. So find that end of the bathtub curve, and then go high in frequency, find the other end of the bathtub curve, and then, you know, put the frequency right in the middle. Because what you'll find is, you know, when you get down to a little bit error rate, you can fiddle with it a bit, and it'll still just be a little bit error rate. So which little bit error rate is the best? Well, find the limits and then put it somewhere in the middle. And if you have more than one Fusion radio, you might want to check them both out at the same time and find a spot where both of them work. And then just be aware that temperature changes for things like that might cause the hotspot to go and shift. With respect to recording, yeah, this is being recorded right now. It's usually just basically all the nets have been recorded. It's more the matter of the work of putting them up on the web. But I will endeavor to put this evening's net up on the web. Back to you, Sharon.
Okay, 89XA. That's great information, as usual, Chris. I thought there was something I was going to ask you, but I can't recall. My head's swimming. Information overload here, so very good. I'll send it back to you, and if you could give me the website address to listen to the broadcast, that would be great. This is KD9IXA.
Yeah, it's going to be hamoperator.com, and there is a net area, I hope. I should check that, I guess. And nominally, we have the net notes from each of the nets. I haven't been doing that lately, just I've had other things to do. Well, there's a list of all the nets we've had. Not all of them, but I haven't been keeping up, obviously. But I'll put this one up there with the net notes, and there'll be a link for the MP3 file. So this is being recorded in MP3. So I'll be up there, hamoperator.com, and go and look in the nets area. And I should say, too, that on Ham Operator, there is a... There is an attempt at, let me bring it up here so I don't mislead people, at talking about hotspots and stuff too. So if you go to, the way Ham Operator works is you have a little menu thing that goes horizontally along along it there, and there's like ham operator and fusion. So if you hover over those, for example, I'm hovering over fusion, I'll see like fusion help, hotspots, fusion links, Yaesu. You can also just click on the fusion. If I go under hotspots, there's a section on, well, if you click on hotspots, you'll get a page on that. And there's also PyStar and hotspot bridges. And, oh, I don't have a Nets thing. I have not put a link up there for the Nets stuff. I'll fix that. Good thing I checked. There's no net link up there. It would be under MinWiz. Let me click on MinWiz here. Maybe it's there. It is there. It's just whether I make it so that you can... No, not there. There is a link there. I'll fix that. So go to Ham Operator, look under MinWiz, and there will be a link to where the nets are. I'm converting from one web management system to another, and obviously not everything's made it across successfully. Any other comments? K9EQ.
WE3IGN.
Don, good to hear from you. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Chris and all on that. Name here is Don. Yeah, just a couple of comments here. Reference the Pi Star website. I don't know if you guys noticed, but the latest firmware update is what they've done is in the frequency portion is they've got two colors, red and green. If it comes up green, means you're pretty well authorized to use that frequency. If it comes up red, you're probably in a satellite part of the band, because a lot of people were transmitting in the satellite part of the band on that. So I guess you'd want to make sure your software's up to date. And also, there's a good website, I don't know if you know about this, Chris, it's called amateurradionotes.com. There's everything you need to know about PyStar there, how to do firmware updates, software updates there. It's hamradionotes.com. And also, just an FYI, too, reference DTMF, like we can do a Wires X, we could, drop in a few tones and turn on your nodes. Well, they can do the same thing in PyStar. And if you go into the PyStar website, there's the YSF tools, the reflector list, you'll see the YSF DTMF and also the one for the FCS reflector as well. I've tried them, they do work. But, again, your radio has to be pretty well tuned into your hotspot or else it won't work properly. And my last thing is the YSF reflector. I run a Raspberry Pi up here. It's been up for 56 days. And believe it or not, it's a Wi-Fi connection. And we had about four or five guys operating on that. And it works pretty good so far. But I'm not saying it's the best. I'm sorry about that. I hope I didn't time out anybody's Wires X node. But anyways, it doesn't work the best, but I'm looking to improve into a small form factor PC. But anyways, that's about it, Chris, and I'll turn it back to you. Well done. Great net. Great mounds of information here, that's for sure. And 73s, and thank you very much. K9EQ, Chris, this is VE3IGN, Don, Ottawa.
Okay, very good, Don. Thanks for checking in there. And definitely some good comments. So Don was referring to a site that... So the thing you'll notice with PyStar is it's not documented anywhere. It just assumes you know everything. And quite frankly, some of it I figured out by going in and looking at the code. Most people don't want to do that. So there is this guy who does the amateur radio notes and has done a fairly good job. I mean, it's basically the instructions for PyStar. I have a link to it. If you go to hamoperator.com and you go to the Fusion hotspot, and there's a section on PyStar. So the hotspot area talks about hotspots and how these things are connected together. If you go and click on the PyStar link, it talks about PyStar, and I've made some of my comments that I made here or there. So there is a link called Playing with PyStar. So on that page, there's the PyStar main page, which takes you to PyStar.uk, and then there's the Playing with PyStar, which is what the fellow that does amateur radio notes calls it. And below that, I have, of course, Learning to Live with PyStar. So as I mentioned, a lot of the stuff is done, it's the spirit of cooperation, of sharing. That's a big thing with GitHub. And if you haven't done it, it might be kind of interesting for you to go and explore what's over at GitHub, all this software and stuff that's out there. It's not just software, it's manuals and other things that the community collaborates to create. So, in the forums and stuff with PyStar, you can certainly give them feedback. I've done that. And, and I'm sure they appreciate contributions, people willing to do things for them. But, yeah, if you haven't gone to it, the website that... that Don mentioned, the amateur radio notes, Playing with PyStar is a good place to go. And if you forget the website or whatever, just ham operator, look under Fusion in the hotspot area, and there is that, plus some of the stuff that we've talked about here. Thanks for bringing that up, Don. I appreciate it. We're all in this together. And we want this stuff to work well and learn from it and experiment and try different things. Any other comments or observations? Go ahead.
Whiskey 8, Charlie Yankee Charlie.
Yeah, maybe later on we'll talk about some YSF stuff here. Not tonight, though. Another day I'll just ping you. But anyways, I'll turn it back to you for any more comments from anybody else on the floor here. This is V3IGN, Don Ottawa. We'll be listening.
Okay, very good, Don. And we've got Mike, W8CYC. Go ahead.
Yes. Good evening and morning, wherever you are in the world. I would just say that I agree 100% with the community. I am currently working on some open hardware, open software, plug and play repeater stuff using Arduino. Excuse me there. Where you can take and plug in a couple HTs and it has a USB sound card. You can either plug into a phone or a computer and actually even integrate Echo Link into it. And, if anybody needs any help with, their own projects in programming in C or C++, or even need some help with circuit design, I'd be more than willing offer some suggestions and some help, and take a look at your code if you're having problems or whatnot, and offer some suggestions. I am good on QRZ as far as email. This is Whiskey 8, Charlie Yankee Charlie, turning it back to Net Control.
Okay, very good, Mike. And by the way, Mike is on the WWGM repeater, the GM standing for General Motors. That's an impressive site. If you want to have something interesting to look at, go look up WWGM and take a look at where they got their repeater located. It's a pretty nice site. And I drive a GM car. So, Mike, that's very generous of you. It'd be nice to see more stuff like that going on. And by that, I mean projects and experimenting and things like that. Over on the ham operator, I've got a page called Projects. There's not much there. I'd like more stuff to be there. There's a short thing on WiresX automation, and that's a thing where you can take your WiresX software and have it switch to certain rooms at certain times. And then one thing I worked on, if you have a DV4 Mini, I've got a Fusion monitor program up there where you can take your DV4 Mini and you download the software here, and it will display metadata that's in the Fusion transmission. And I use that to help figure out how some of the stuff is working. It'd be nice to have some more projects up there. Arduino is a really neat way to go. If you haven't experimented with Arduino or you haven't done any programming, they have a real nice system to get you going. And, you know, sometimes you just got to try something new in life. You know, it costs you $10 at the most. Get yourself an Arduino board, hook it up to your computer, and write some simple program to make the little flashy lights go on and off or something. You know, start small. But, yeah, all kinds of things you can do, repeater controllers and stuff. And, Mike, one thing I think the Fusion community needs, and by the way, Arduino's perfect for this. And so there are times when you want to just power cycle the repeater. Who knows? You just might want to do it. Like, let's say the repeater controller locks up, and it'll take you a month or two before the snow will melt and you can get to the mountain. And there's your repeater locked on the air. Well, pretty much always the receiver's going to be working. And the idea here is to take a little DTMF decoder, which you can get for the Arduino. It's just one port you get for $3-4. You wire it up with like three, four wires. And the Arduino can now decode DTMF. And so the thought was, is you go and you connect the DTMF decoder to the output of the repeater's receiver, and now you want to go turn AC power on and off. Well, you know, you don't want to mess around with AC power. You might get a shock or get electrocuted. So the idea here is you go to like Menards or one of those places and get one of these RF remote AC outlet switches. Well, I mean, that's just a little transmitter with some contact closures, which you wire into the Arduino. So when you enter in the super secret DTMF command into the repeater, what the Arduino would do, not being powered from the repeater, it would use this little remote control thing to send the command to turn the AC outlet off, thus turning the repeater off, wait a couple seconds, and then send the command to turn it on again, and maybe send the on command a few more times just in case. And thusly, with a DTMF command, you power cycle the repeater. And of course, it would be easy to put something into the code, like if you wanted to power cycle it every week or every evening, you know, to do something like that without any DTMF commands, or turn that feature on and off. So I'm sure, I'll turn it back over to you, Mike. I'm sure you can imagine how something like that might be built.
I jump back in. This is W8CYC.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, I can imagine all kinds of stuff like that. You know, and if the repeater hangs on, you know, you could even program like Watchdog, you know, where if it hangs on something, you know, it'll automatically, you know, kill the power and start it back up, you know, as a reboot, you know. And you don't even need like a bunch of Arduinos, you know. The standard Arduino has, you know, 12 digital IOs, basically, you know, and 6 analog IOs. So, you know, if you do tight coding, you know, if you're back from the old days like I am, and you can program things tight, you know, using bytes instead of, you know, just big massive blocks of memory, you can get, you know, one Arduino to do, you know, actually a fair amount of stuff. And, yeah. Like I said, you know, you can do Watchdogs, you can do, like he said, you know, the remote stuff, you know, with the DTMF codes, you know, you can even set it up to monitor a different frequency, you know, and have you transmit on that, and it can receive it. They have bar kits, you know, that you can buy for, you know, like $20 that you can transmit on that, you know, to send the commands if you wanted to do it that way. You know, but the things you can do with Arduino are practically limitless, you know. Just use your imagination. And with that, this is W8CYC. I'll send it back to the control.
Okay, very good, Mike. I'm going to give you homework to, when we have the MinWizNet, to check in and let us know what's happening with the Arduino project and see if anybody has any Arduino questions. If you are interested in the Arduino, and you should be, you can go to arduino.cc. That's the main website. I'll put a link up on Ham Operator. A-R-D-U-I-N-O, arduino.cc. And if you type Arduino or anything close to it into Google, it'll probably take you to the right place. But there is a program there you download, and it's it allows you to build the code, and you can go to Amazon or someplace like that. And I mean, I've bought these little processor boards for as little as $4 a piece. You hook them up on the USB to the computer, and you write some code, and they have code examples there. You just, you know, first off, you probably just take something that somebody else has already written, and you build it and download it to your little board and watch the little blinky lights run. And then you can make changes to it. Like, oh, I want the lights to go faster. Well, you go and make the change and see if the lights go faster. You know, start small. But arduino.cc, and I'll get some links up there on the Ham Operator for that. And Mike, if you got some projects that would fit into that projects category, I'd like to put some information up there about them. So anyway, this is what the MinWiz is about, experimenting and stuff like that. But we digress. We're talking about hotspots and things like that. Any other comments, observations, what have you? Go ahead, K92. Okay, I guess it's getting late enough here. Just notice we have Rocket-AKB connected. One just wonders what that is. Rocket-AKB. Huh. Have to look that up. Interesting things here with the folks that are connected. Hightowers is connected. Hi there, Hightowers. Guess what? I have a feeling that's a club associated with a company that manufactures towers. And we've got, it looks like Junior is attached from Trinidad Tobago's. So hi there, Junior. We've got the Kentucky guys connected. Pretty good group. Anyway, any other comments? If not, we'll call it a night. This is K92.
K1KC.
Ah, the Hightowers guy. K1KC, go ahead.
Hey, Chris, you've been at it for hours there. God bless you. No, Hightowers is not associated with any company or anything like that. It's just a standalone node. My main node runs a digital learning group. But I got a question, if you don't mind changing gears, I got a question related to what we're talking about on the net.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, didn't know that. Oh, all right. Because don't you live near somebody that makes towers? I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah, go ahead with your question.
Well, no. This is the high end of my county, though, so there are some good towers around here, including a 100-footer right down the street here. But the question is, do you use the terms validation server and list server interchangeably, or is the validation server a front runner that runs interference for the list server?
Okay. I think I would, authentication server. I didn't go into detail. The specific process, of course, is that when you start your Wires X node, you actually send a HTTP regular web request out to a yaesu.com URL, and you get a blob of binary back, and that tells you where the servers are. And there is a form of authentication that you go through to, you know, make sure that your Wires X node is, you go through the registration process with the serial numbers or the DPID or whatever, and it's just checking that stuff out. Once that is done, yes, you're in the realm of the list server, which is just keeping these lists and serving them out. So validation, I guess I would call it authentication. Maybe, is that what you're talking about? That occurs at the very beginning and doesn't occur again.
Well, I'd heard you use the term validation server plenty of times in the past, and I might have been using it incorrectly. And when you started talking about the authentication process tonight, I thought, well, you know, maybe there's a front runner there, and it hands over the list server after the validation is done there. So it's that comment tonight that made me start thinking about that.
Okay, well, there are times when I'll just, simplify something. It's complicated enough for, try to hit the area where I'm not actually lying to anybody, but maybe the details aren't 100% there. But anyway, as an aside, for those that you wonder how, we figure out what traffic is going to Japan and what the servers do and everything like that, generally, the world uses a program called Wireshark to analyze network traffic. You can run Wireshark, too. It's from a company that actually does this for a business, but it's free for individuals. And it lets you monitor traffic coming in and out of your computer. Now, it's not for the faint of heart. But if you want to know what your computer is doing, this is the tool to do it. And the reason I mention it is, ta-da, Wireshark 3 has come out, which is a whole new thing and way better than the previous version of Wireshark. There's all kinds of new people. My mail program just crashed. Just disappeared. Anyway, Wireshark 3 is out now, and it's just a whole new ballgame. Really a super program. It monitors network stuff and stuff digital. Mail quit unexpectedly. Duh. And you might be interested in that. It'll also monitor USB connections and things like that. So, in the realm of hacking and playing around with stuff and figuring out like what is exactly going on with my HRA 200, well, Wireshark can tell you all that. Any other comments there? K1KC from K90Q.
Hey, I appreciate all the effort you put into it there, Chris. Have a good evening, K1KC.
Okay. Well, my computer just wanted me to send a bug report to Apple, so off it went. And my comment was, it was just sitting there when it crashed. That distracted me. Sorry about that. Any other comments or observations? This is K90Q. Okay, very good. Thanks everybody for hanging in there. Hopefully it was of some use. I will take the audio here and endeavor to put it up on ham operator for those who want to be tortured and listen to it again. We got a ZL3 in there, VK5, a couple of VK5s. Hi there, down under. Winter's coming your way. Summer's coming our way. What else? Wolfpack is in there. Bunch of cool places. 73 all. This is K92.